What's up, everybody? My name is Colby Allen. I'm the college minister here at College Heights. Over the next few months, we're going to be posting episodes interviewing each of the adult leaders here in the college age ministry. Our intern, Matt Cassius, is a great interviewer, and so my heart is to get him in a room with each of our leaders to give them an opportunity to share their story with you. Without any further ado, here is Matt Cassius with Raymond Vile III, or as many of you know him, Treby Baby.
What is up, everybody? We are back, and we came out with a freaking swing, because we got Trey Vile out here.
Better than ever.
Better than ever. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
The weather's changing. It's a little bit cooler now.
It is a little bit cooler.
I'm not sweating so much. Dude. So that's always a win.
I absolutely despise Joplin whenever I first come out here for fall semester, because I feel like I have to shower three times a day.
It's real. You get these extremes of both seasons. So you're sweating in the summer, mosquitoes everywhere. Then you hit this sweet spot. Right around September, October, where it's nice for like 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, it's not long.
And then it's freezing rain.
Yeah. It's not long, but those 2 to 3 weeks are gorgeous.
Bliss.
It's
pure bliss.
Incredible. And being from Los Angeles, I've never experienced seasons before. I remember being taught them in elementary school, and I don't think I've thought of them since. Until I came here, I didn't know when the seasons shifted or like changed until I came to Joplin.
And then you meet people who can like feel it in their knees. And that's a reality. That's a scientific reality around here.
That is something.
We trust them more than the weather men and
than the
women.
Calendar.
Exactly. Exactly. The calendar may change. It might be a quarter of a day off. But people who got surgery in the last decade,
they
always
can tell
there. Always there.
That's so funny. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Joplin is something else, especially when it comes to the weather.
Yeah.
But you've been here for a while.
I am going on 5 years. 5 years in Joplin. And it's been a love-hate relationship for the majority of that time. I've learned to see some patterns here. What's interesting is that you have people who are really dedicated and sold out to Joplin, Missouri. And I love that, and I love seeing that. Then you have the whole other crowd that is just combative to that.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that here. This is Joplin, Missouri.
They hate it.
But they got that idea from the fact that it wasn't like that. Mm-hmm. When they first showed up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's this vicious cycle of things like almost not being allowed to happen.
Yeah.
And people getting frustrated that they're happening and not happening simultaneously.
I get you. I get you. Well, Trey Vile and I have known each other for 4 years now. This is the fourth year.
Yeah, going on 4 years.
That's crazy, dude. It's been a long time.
I still get blown away by that, thinking about when we first became friends.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a great question to start. Like, do you remember like a moment? Maybe it isn't the moment where we became friends, but a moment where like you just were like, yeah, we're close.
Well, it's funny. I don't remember when we became close. I think it was a very gradual process of like you have those conversations almost like a friendship DTR. Of coming to a person, and DTR is defining the relationship for those
outside.
Yeah,
for everybody who doesn't go to Ozark.
Exactly, who doesn't go to Christian college. So it's one of those things where you and I sat down, and it was kind of just like, hey, man, I think you're really cool. I would love to get to know you better. And would you want to go out to coffee sometime? You could literally take it and transplant it into like asking a girl out, and it would be almost identical. But it's just like two bros.
That's what
two
we
guys
did.
Just hanging
we
out.
Dated.
We dated. And we're in a steady, committed, long-term relationship. It's still going strong.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 100% into this.
You think my parents are going to listen to this? Or my wife?
Trey's married.
I'm married.
To Toby, now Vile.
I
realized.
Toby Marie.
I texted you both in a group chat today. And I realized that your contacts are still Trey Vile and Toby Adams.
Dude, you got to change that.
I know, I need
you gotta
to.
You got to change that stat.
I know, dude. Your wedding was one of the best weddings I've ever been to.
I'm glad.
In my
Thank
life.
You.
It was so fun.
I really, that's one thing that we really valued was just our friends having fun because we knew that that would mean that we would have fun. We didn't want it to be super formal. We wanted, of course, the vows to be somewhat solemn.
Yeah.
Because it's important. It's a really important moment. We didn't want to make a mockery of it. But then the after party was going to be nuts. And did everything that we could to make it fun.
It was genuinely one of the best weddings I've ever been to. I have to say top two simply because my sister would kill me.
Of course.
If I didn't say her wedding was the best. But
naturally.
Besides
That's
my
very
sister,
generous. That's
best
very
wedding
Thank you.
I've been to. Oh my goodness. It was so much fun.
And there was a reason that we chose the venue. It's not lost on us that Cane's was a 2-minute drive from the venue.
Oh, and that's exactly where I went afterwards.
Exactly. That's where we knew everyone was going to go
yeah,
afterwards.
Yeah, it was
It was intentional.
Raising Cane's. Shout out. If you want a sponsor, please do.
Please do.
I love you with all of my heart.
I'll take a Caniac combo. No slaw, extra toast.
Buttered on both sides.
Wait, you can get it buttered on both sides?
What? How did you not know this? You get extra crispy chicken. You get
no
buttered
way.
On both sides on the toast. And then if you're not getting a lemonade or a sweet tea, you're wrong.
This isn't even an ad. And I'm like, it's making me want to buy Cane's.
We should go this weekend.
We should go. For those of you who don't know, who maybe are outside of Joplin, the nearest Cane's to us is probably an hour away
like that.
In a different state.
Uh-huh.
So,
yeah, for real.
we all got excited when we found out that there was going to be another Cane's an hour away from us. Just in a different direction.
Yeah, in the same state.
In the same state. So that was big news for us here in Joplin.
We love Cane's here.
We love you. We love you, Cane's.
We love you. Sponsor us, please. Please. Okay. But yeah, it's going back to sort of when we got close. I remember spring break 2 years ago. That's really where I think about it.
Was that North Carolina?
No, that was Kentucky.
Oh, that was 2 years ago. Holy
we were in
cow.
The same group.
Yes.
That was my sophomore year. Because we were already close at that point.
Uh-huh.
You and I were. But that was when I really got close to Toby.
Yes.
But I remember that week. That week was when, like, you, me, Toby, our whole group, really. But we spent so much time together. And I remember just, like, thinking at one point, like, yeah. Like, these are people who I want to be spending my time with.
Cool.
Like, they're
I
worth
appreciate
it.
That. That's yeah. very kind. That's
until very kind. Until I have to say this. I've known you. This is the fourth year. And for, I mean, I don't call you anything else. Your name's not Trey.
You're right. You're right. I'll admit it.
Your name isn't Trey.
Do you know what my real name is?
Yes, I do. It's Raymond.
Yes. My real name is not Trey. For those of you who might only know me nominally.
There are going to be some people who just find
and they're
going to
be blown
Trey
away
right
by
now.
It. And I don't get it. Like, for me, maybe it's just because I've had it my entire life.
Yeah.
But so many people have gotten heated about it. But for those of you who don't know, my real name is Raymond Charles Vile III.
Yeah. And, like, your middle name's not even Trey.
Yeah. And that's the first response I always get. And in my mind, it makes sense. I'm like, okay, I say that, and then people should be like, oh, yeah, Trey.
Yeah.
Because
the third.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. And so, long story short, of course, I'm the third, so that means that my dad's name is Raymond, and my grandpa's name is Raymond. Mm-hmm. Now, my grandpa goes by Ray, my dad goes by Raymond, and they didn't really want to call me Raymond.
Yeah.
To get it all mixed up with two other men in my family.
Of course.
So my parents actually decided they would call me Trey, which is actually a pretty common trope to call the third Trey, because you can do it with multiple different languages, but my family is Italian. So
okay.
In Italian, 1 to 3 is uno, due, tre. And so they just called me Trey.
I love the name Trey, but it took me 2 years of being your friend to find out that your name wasn't Trey.
I don't hand out my ID to many people.
Yeah.
Frankly, the only time I've ever used Raymond has been in classes because I want to seem more prestigious.
So is that going to be a thing? Like, the older you get, you think you're going to switch over to Raymond?
You know, I've considered it. But the thing is that Raymond is not like a, it's not like a vintage name. You know, it's just an old name. Okay. It's like Paul, like Paul is just an old name right now. It's not like a it's not like a name that carries a lot of weight traditionally.
Yeah.
So, so like Raymond, I feel like is still an old name, but it hasn't really come back around as being like a cool old name. I'm trying to think of examples
of a cool old name.
Yeah. There are some that I like, but my wife would disagree.
Yeah, we just had the baby name talk the other day.
Yeah, we're not planning on having kids for like another 5 years. But
this is the important thing.
It's the content of our relationship right now.
It's
going
to take 5 years to figure this out.
Yeah. We actually on the way here, I got a call from Toby. She asked me if I like the name Moses, and I do.
Moses.
So, Moses, yeah.
I like the name Moses.
A little white boy named Moses. I don't know how I feel about that, but...
I guess you have a point there.
But I still like the name.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Everybody who's listening, you cannot steal that. Moses.
Bring it.
It is the vials now. Trademark.
I'll arm wrestle you, and I'll probably lose.
You'd beat me. Probably.
I don't know. You're pretty athletic, dude.
I mean, something like that.
I read. I read a lot. I mean, I'm turning pages. That's more of like a forearm.
I'm turning pages.
I'm turning pages.
That sounds like it could be like a super deep, like, metaphysical act.
It's the... metaphor for me moving on. I'm turning the page.
I'm turning pages.
It makes me think of that Sleeping at Last song, Turning Page, that was in the Twilight movies.
I never watched them, nor have I listened to that song, but
Tear
I do
jerker.
Love Sleeping at Last.
Tearjerker, believe me. Check it out.
Okay.
We're not sponsored by Sleeping at Last either, but he's got a pretty good
also,
podcast
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, he's great. Listen to him, please.
His name's Ryan.
Ryan.
I don't know his last name, but
yeah,
his name's
not
Ryan.
Sleeping at Last.
You're telling me your first name isn't Sleeping? That's crazy.
Okay, it's different. You went by Trey.
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. But yeah, I love Sleeping at Last so much, and I've listened to his podcast for so long now. Mm-hmm. But
he has a really good one on the Enneagram that I love.
That's why I got into it, the Enneagram specifically. Mm-hmm. But... I guess we're already on the Enneagram. What's your Enneagram number? Or are you like super against the Enneagram?
I'm not. We actually used it for our premarital counseling,
okay,
which was super helpful. And I'd also recommend premarital to anybody who's planning on getting married at any point in time. Mm-hmm. So it helped us out a ton. We used the Enneagram for a lot of that, and it was really, really helpful in finding out what some of our strengths are and what our weaknesses are and ways that we tend to manipulate each other, which we all do.
Yeah.
We all manipulate people in one way or another, and it's good to be aware of that and to find healing there.
Yeah.
So I am I've identified so far as a 2-wing 3.
Nice.
So a great example of this, I was in a D group, so a discipleship group here at College Heights, run by some wonderful people, Nathan and Tracy Horton. And
incredible people.
Yes. So they would feed us every week, incredible food. And every week, it was me and probably 8 other college students. I would go and I would wash the dishes every single week. And I had this weird sort of, like, I had to be the one to wash the dishes out of everybody. I would get actually upset whenever people would try to do that and take that away from me.
Yeah.
And Tracy was actually the one that called it out. And she called me out and said, like, I love you despite whether or not you wash the dishes. It doesn't matter to me. And it clicked in my mind that, oh, this whole time I've just been trying to like get more love for myself by trying to serve people and really just taking on whatever role I have to take on in order to achieve that. So that was a huge thing for Toby and I in our premarital counseling.
Yeah.
I found that I would just do a bunch of stuff for her, and I would go way above and beyond things that on the outside seemed great and nobody really care as much about it, which is the difficulty of the two, is it seems nice, but in all reality, it's manipulating another person just to get what you want, yeah. Which at the end of the day is typically just love and affirmation.
Dang. I mean, I feel like that's a great transition into, like, let's talk about your story.
Let's do it.
You talk about a little bit about your Enneagram 2 Wing 3.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about how you got there.
Yeah.
So what was your childhood like? Family life, school life, whatever. What was growing up like for Raymond Charles Vile III?
Oh boy. So I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to Raymond Vile Jr. and Amber Smith. So they, my parents were really young, 19 and 21, whenever they had me. So very young. And pretty much their whole vision for having me was not by accident, which I guess I appreciate. I don't know. But they basically just had this view of this nuclear family that was like really cute. It was just like a very cute idea. And then once they actually got pregnant, they realized, hey, we're not married. Having kids is really difficult. So they got married really quickly. And from the get-go, had a really difficult marriage. They're very different people. They were both just so young. There was still a lot of growing to do. I mean, I'm 23 now, and marriage is still like a lot of work.
Yeah,
it's beautiful, but it's still a lot of work. So I can't imagine being 19 and 21 with someone that you barely know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, props to them. They did try to stick it out, but ultimately they did get divorced when I was about 3. So it was myself and my younger brother, Hayden. We moved into my grandparents' house in Tulsa, Oklahoma, down on off of Cherry Street, if you know where that is. It's a beautiful part of town. So we grew up there, and I kind of had this blissful ignorance in some ways, but additionally, at a very young age, it required me to kind of become the man of the house because it was just me, my mom, and my younger brother. So my mom tells this story of when she was pregnant with my brother. My parents had split up, and we lived in a one-bedroom apartment at that time, and she had basically just found out that she was pregnant, and it was just devastating to her. And so she's crying, and I crawled out of my little race car bed, and I crawled into bed with her. I was probably 2 or 3 at this time, and she tells me the story that I just like rubbed her back and said, "It'll be okay, Mom. I'll take care of you." Which is, in some ways, like it's sort of a tearjerker in like a really cute way,
yeah,
and like a really beautiful way of like, wow, that seemed very, very sweet.
Yeah.
But also, looking at what it did to my brain at a very young age, it gave me this sense of I have to grow up really quickly. So from a very young age, I had this idea of what love should be, how life should be, like what it meant to be a parent. So all these things were attributed to me at a time when I think I really should have been more concerned with just being a kid. And so that carried on into my adolescent years. So moved in with my grandparents, lived there. Wonderful, wonderful people. They took us in and just really cared for my family until my mom remarried a man named Charles Colaw. So incredible man of God. He was 22 at the time, and she was 28. So, I mean, kudos to him for being willing to take on, at 22 years old, taking on a wife and two kids that are not your own.
Yeah.
So that's a handful, pretty much being a kid yourself. And so it was very, very tough on him, I'm sure, but it really changed the trajectory of my life at a very young age. So I had a really deep view of idealistic view of how things should go. And from a very young age, I recognized this isn't how life should be, because I saw people around me who had their mom and dad together, and they would go do things together, and they seemed to be in love. And so I got really kind of drunk on this idea of what love was between two people. And I wanted that. I wanted that so bad. So I felt really lonely. I always experienced this lingering sense of loneliness of like, I don't have that one person in my life. And it was painful. It was painful for a long time. So I remember, so we moved from Tulsa to a town called Bartlesville, Oklahoma, which is about 45 minutes north of Tulsa. It's about 30,000 people. Not much going on. It was a boom town back in like the early 20th century.
Okay.
But since then it's kind of been in a plateau. It's about, 30,000, 35,000.
Got it.
So, I remember in like second and third grade having a massive crush on this girl. And I would like, I wrote her love letters and like, I wrote her a letter for her mom to ask if I could, like if I could pretty much date her daughter.
That's adorable.
Yes, in some ways, but then also like, dude, don't worry about that. Like, go like crash your skateboard or something.
Yeah,
you know, go watch Star Wars. Go and like go play with your Power Rangers, which is what I was doing on the side.
Yeah,
and so it's not like I had a had like this super deep like existential childhood. That was certainly a part of it, and certainly a part that that I think shaped my future.
Yeah,
maybe in more ways than Power Rangers did, but I've yet to find out for sure. And so that's when I entered the church as well. So I kind of grown up in the Catholic Church a little bit and don't really have much memory of it. Didn't get like I didn't get confirmed, do like First Communion, anything like that. Then we started going to a Wesleyan church in Bartlesville where my grandpa was the pastor.
Okay.
So it was pretty typical, I think, at that point growing up. Having somewhat of like a nuclear family, but having divorced parents. And so like doing the every other weekend thing, was pretty difficult. And then also having a dad that, I really didn't see eye to eye with a lot of the time. So that created a lot of wounds at a very young age that I have, you know, over the past probably 6-7 years have only just started dealing with. And I know that that's something that'll probably carry for a long time, but, but I really got to see a lot of healing there. And so is he. So I still talk to my dad, and we have a great relationship. So love you. Love you, Dad. But, yeah, so grew up in Bartlesville. I felt like I was very different from a lot of people in my family. I was very musically inclined. I started playing the drums in, like, fifth grade and just loved it. So I got into band, traveled all around the place doing with band, started, like, getting more classically trained. We went to like Ireland and Florida and Chicago and St. Louis and all these different places. And it was really cool, but it was so different from anything that my, the rest of my family had experienced that it was very much, they didn't know how to relate, relate to me in that way.
Yeah.
So they're very much like athletic, like rise and grind type people. And I was always more of like the, like sit in my room by myself and like put on a sad record. So, which, and Death Cab for Cutie was like my life.
Death Cab for Cutie?
Yes. You've never heard of Death Cab?
No.
Dude, it'll have you in your feelings for a minute.
Okay.
So, for those of you who know Death Cab for Cutie, Ben Gibbard, he just messed me up for multiple years. So yeah, so I was an emotional little kid and I just had no one really in my life to help guide that. And so for a long time, if I had emotions that were viewed as negative, quote unquote, by, say by my parents, it was a process of me stuffing it and choosing to be happy. Which that didn't work.
Yeah.
It just plain and simple didn't work. So I didn't learn how to properly express my emotions, never like necessarily anger or think or like rage or anything like that, but more just like sort of just like a melancholy all the time, you know. I felt like this sort of sadness, but it wasn't necessarily bad. I kind of wanted to feel it, you know. You listen to a really good song, or you like see a great movie, something that affects you for a long time, and you almost don't want to leave that emotion. And so that was, I think, one way that I filtered life, but I didn't have anyone to help guide that. So I stuffed a lot of those negative emotions, emotions that weren't considered kosher necessarily in my family. And so, but I mean, I was always involved in like youth group. I was the kid like everyone's parents trusted because I was just so risk adverse, and I was always like the yes sir, yes ma'am, super polite kind of kid.
Yeah.
Never got into trouble. I remember at one point in high school, my mom told me, just like in the movie The Sandlot, like just jump some fences, scrape your knees, you know, get in trouble. And they really wanted me to because I just didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I would sit in my room and I would listen to sad vinyls and I would read books and I would like crawl out onto the roof outside of my window and like stargaze for hours at a time.
Wow.
And it's part of it is like, wow, that's so deep. That's so cool. But in all reality, there were other things that I probably could have enjoyed and focused on as a teenager instead of trying to conquer the questions of life and all these things I had rattling around in my brain at 15.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it almost seems like you talk about it now. You're talking about how like, oh, well, like you don't have to hear it as something that's like super cool or something like that's super like trendy almost nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's like the people who are doing that now, who are making it a trend, are doing it mainly because they are wrestling with those questions.
Yeah.
And it's almost like realize that he wasn't doing it because it was a trend, but because like, he was trying to filter life. You were trying to filter life.
Yes, exactly. And then going back to the Enneagram, that's part of how I filter the world around me is through my heart, through my emotions. And I don't think that that's necessarily unique. I think that's probably a third of people.
Yeah.
And there isn't a good framework, I think, for how to do that, not only in a way that honors God, but just in a way that's healthy for the individual. And allowing people to experience life in that way. I think more recently, at least as far as I've seen, there have been some great resources that have come out of that, whether it's like Pete Scazzaro's Emotionally Healthy Spirituality, like huge,
great book.
Incredible. I mean, from A to Z, you could find a number of things, self-help books out the nose, but isn't that kind of pretty typical of our generation of like just self-help all over the place.
Yeah.
But then growing up in Bartlesville, I don't remember a whole lot because I really didn't do much. It was pretty consistent, like just going to school. I always had kind of part-time jobs, like whether it was teaching drum lessons or working for my parents, whatever, you name it. I was just pretty consistent throughout my childhood. So there aren't many huge landmarks that I can reflect back on. I mean, besides maybe a couple of like times that I was turned down by a girl that I had a crush on, which were pretty devastating at the
time. Always. Yeah. It always is.
Always, always. Like when you're in sixth grade, it's the end of the world.
It really is.
It is the end of the world. And so I do remember those times vividly, but there were also a lot of really great things. I really got to be around some amazing people who did help kind of guide me in a few ways. Like they saw things within me that they tried to, you know, call out, maybe things that I was gifted with or that I might be called to, things that I did well at, and then helped really refine those things. So for instance, like I had a drum instructor named Matt Bruska, who he saw that I was interested in this and had maybe some semblance of talent. And he really poured into me, like met with me one-on-one, and more than just taught me how to play the drums well, he mentored me, even though I didn't ask him. So people like that were a huge influence in my life, and that I'm just still grateful for to this day.
Yeah, of course. That's awesome. As you talked a little bit about, you grew up more in the Catholic Church, and then you went you started going to the church that your grandpa preached at, and different situations that had gone on with your family. How did that affect your view of God? as you grew up? Because, I mean, I don't know, maybe you were like, when you were going to church, you were pretty all in, you were thinking about it, or were you more like nominal in the sense of like didn't really think about it much? But how did your childhood affect the way that you viewed Jesus or you viewed God?
Yes. So I grew up pretty devout. There was never really a time where I was like, I'm not really a Christian. Mm-hmm. So I grew up always wanting to be that guy, like the guy who was like always serving at youth group, who was always, you know, showing up to the CU at the polls and like leading worship and like preaching every now and again. So I always like kind of was that guy, the typical like church camp dude. So I'd say the way that shaped my view of God, in the tradition that I grew up in, it was, at least at that time, it was during that whole generation of like, it's not religion, it's relationship. Which it's like has its merits, but for the most part, like, yeah, but it's still religion.
Yeah.
So it, so I grew up and that was kind of it. And so I focused so heavily on like removing any other worldview than like what I was getting on Sunday mornings. So it was like we would pretty much just kind of talk smack on like Catholics and Calvinists. We talk crap about like the people who were worshiping that were like dancing too much, and the people who were worshiping with no instruments, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was it was very secluded in that sense of there was one way to do it, and that's our way. It's okay. Like my tribe is better than your tribe, sort of thing. And so it created a very narrow path. It was very righteousness based, I guess, in a sense. Like basically, I remember thinking this as a kid, and I don't think that this was a landmark of what I believed.
Yeah.
But this idea that, well, shoot, if I sin and Jesus comes back before I pray for forgiveness, I'm going to get left behind.
Yeah.
That was like the Left Behind books were terrifying to me.
Oh, they were terrifying to everybody.
Yeah. And that's like, I didn't touch Revelation as a kid for that exact reason.
Yeah.
Because I just would have these nightmares that I would get like left behind.
Hmm.
And then what do I do? And this whole like, it's fear-based, like this fear-based spirituality.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a pretty consistent thing for a lot of kids.
Yeah.
Because, and that's the way that a lot of people parent is, if you don't do this, then I'll blank.
Yeah.
And so I thought the same way about God. And it was, if I don't do this, then I'm not going to go to heaven. I'm not going to be living in the blessing. My life is going to go south. And kind of this idea that if you're not a Christian, your life must suck, or you must be a terrible person. So that really shaped a lot of how I viewed the people around me for a long time who weren't Christians. It was kind of hellfire. Like you want to save them from the hellfire, and you do that by forcing them to make better choices.
Yeah.
You know, it was sin management, as Dallas Willard calls it.
Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting.
I guess, but on the bright side, there was a positive side to it.
Yeah.
It did instill a lot of discipline at a very young age, which I can't be grateful enough for, because now I see how much that has benefited. Having that mental orientation towards, sometimes you just do it and it's not easy, but you do it because it's right.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of what I was kind of raised with. And my stepdad Charles would always say this thing. He would say, the true character of a man is tested when, oh my gosh, I'm losing it, is tested when everything is going awry. So the true character of a man is tested when everything is going awry. So it's not in like the easy moments where you can pretty much just fake it. It's in when everything is really difficult, your character is going to show.
Yeah.
And so that was always huge for me. That was a big thing that I just was instilled in me at a young age, and I've carried with me to this day. And so I cannot be grateful enough for that mentality of like, I'm just going to do this because I need to.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
because it's good.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I believe that, or I guess I believe this about, I mean, everybody. Like, when you were growing up, is some people have better situations than others, no doubt.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like,
that's 100% true. But there are a lot of, sometimes there's a lot of bad that comes from that, but sometimes there's a lot of good that comes from that. And most of the time, it's both. There's a yes. lot of bad and a lot of good
yes,
that have come from it. Yeah. And so, I mean, as people talk about their childhoods, like, there are things that were instilled in them that, like, they carry to this day. And it's a good part of who they are. And that's an incredible thing. Like, I think about my childhood, and I wouldn't be as passionate about certain things if it wasn't for the way that I was raised. Going on with that, there are other things that were in my childhood that, like, probably shouldn't have been there, you know?
Yeah.
And so by no means is, like, everybody's childhood, like, all bad or all good. Like, it's yes and.
Yes.
It's both. Mm-hmm. And so going on when we grow up, and then we get to this point, sort of like going into college and to high school, even throughout college and throughout 20s for different people, it's like, a lot of that bad starts to catch up with us.
Yeah.
And that's when we start asking those really tough, difficult life questions. And it's normally around that age that people start becoming more aware of some of the things that are in their lives that maybe they suppressed or repressed.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that. So looking back, what do you think, what sort of hurt do you think you went through because of, like, the different ways you viewed God? As viewing God as a righteousness-based sort of God for at least a portion of your life, did that bring pain into your life? What hurt did you experience in that?
Yeah, I think for me, I really viewed God as wanting to send me to hell, but I had to convince him otherwise. And maybe I wouldn't have told you that. I probably would have still told you, God is love. God is good. But it was really deep down, I was more afraid that God really wanted to send me to hell. And that lingered with me even until college. When I started looking a little bit deeper into that, and it's really just the wound itself was that God is my cosmic coach, but he's not going to be kind to me. He might be good, but he's good only in the sense that I'm not good. And he has no desire to really care for me in the way that I want to be cared for or need to be cared for.
Yeah.
And so that was really painful, because then I would hear people give sermons about God being our provider and God fulfilling every need and desire that we have. And that just, like, didn't click with me. The view of God that I had did not line up with that, because my whole view of following Jesus as the Lord of my life was that I was given all the resources that I would need, and it would be up to me to do with them what I would. And there would have to be something that would basically convince God that I wasn't deserving of hell. And so it just really threw off my view of God as a loving father, someone who loved me in the same sense of, like, I love my wife, and even more so, especially. So that didn't really make sense, although I would still use all the catchphrases as a young Christian boy would, like God loves me, God is for me, like, God is my protector, my provider, he's the creator of everything. So though I would say those things, I don't think I really believed it, and I think that was the wound that really made its mark on my heart.
And so how did that wound, I was struggling to find my words in the last question, but how does that wound, or how do you think that wound manifested in your life?
Well, I think a lot of it can be traced back to even my view of my own father. So my dad, was not the loving, compassionate, strong father that I expected him to be. Hmm. It might have been a little bit idealistic, but I had very high expectations for what a father is. And I saw from a very young age that my dad wasn't that for me. And so, of course, I didn't view God any different. It was that God is like aloof. He's here sometimes, but just to make sure that like I'm getting good grades, that I'm doing what he expects of me. Mm. And then he pieces out. So it really came down to combining that with this sense of like, of life is a grind, is pretty much what my parents would say all the time. Like, life's just a grind. Life's a grind. So pretty much just working. Like, my whole life is just working to be a halfway decent person.
Hmm.
And you kind of pray that, like, at the end of the day, the good outweighs the bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've done enough good things. Like, I was never addicted to porn. I never watched Family Guy on TV. I made my wife wear, you know, a denim skirt, or, which I guess, sorry, that's probably calling out a whole group of people's views. I did the thing that we were talking about earlier. I made a joke that I probably shouldn't have, but that's okay because we all do it.
Yeah.
So, so sorry for those of you who believe in denim skirts. But yeah, so going back to, it's this sense of, like, I am just trying to do enough good things that the bad things don't seem so bad.
Hmm. Yeah.
And so that resulted in me being like a good kid, I guess. So like on the outside, it looked good. So similarly to, as I was talking about the Enneagram earlier and serving people, it looked great on the outside. Hmm. Like on paper, I was like the perfect child.
Yeah.
But internally, I was still super broken.
Yeah.
Because I was still working for the affection of somebody who has already given it to me.
Hmm.
And I just wouldn't accept it.
Yeah.
So that's, I'd say, how it manifested in my own life was this, was it formed my character on the outside, but left me parched internally.
Hmm. You talk about, you talked about earlier, at least, repressing mm-hmm. the feelings that you were feeling and just sort of just continuing to live life, which I don't want to say is typical by any means. That's not the right word, but it sort of goes hand in hand with the sort of personality that is very serving, that is very like the good person. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm just trying to portray what you said.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like most of the time we do, or those type of people do, try to serve so that they can help the feelings of somebody else, so that they can avoid the feelings that they repressed or they were pushing down for so long.
Yeah, I would agree with that for the most part. I'd say for me specifically, it was a touch different, only in that I wanted to express those.
Mm.
And I needed somebody to show me how to do that.
Mm.
And that was a deep desire of mine. And I think I was aware of that, which maybe some people do that with sort of an unconscious mind.
Yeah.
Moving in that, and they suppress it without even realizing it. And then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they're like, I have never experienced this for myself.
Yeah.
So I wanted that validation really, really badly. And I wanted people to love me, and so I was willing to do whatever it took to get that love. However, I think the suppressing really came from almost like my parents' personalities, because they're so cerebral and cognitive, and they just don't filter life through their emotions. They kind of view emotions, at least the negative ones, as bad things,
yeah,
or things that should be only experienced in the most minute way possible.
Hmm.
So it's like you experience what you have to, and then you move on. It's like you grieve, and then you brush yourself off and pick yourself up by your own bootstraps. So that was kind of the view that they had. And so in order to almost survive within my household, it was a lot of stuffing and suppressing just so that way I could really receive love from them.
Yeah.
So I did that so that way they would say, like, oh, great job. You know, you're doing well, like you're doing it right.
Yeah.
See how joyful you are. See how happy you are all the time. How optimistic you are. And they would give me love in return for that, like this sort of monetary exchange.
Yeah. That's interesting. So in the midst of all of this, the pain of feeling inadequate in a sense and having to earn just love from anybody, where did Jesus meet you, and how did Jesus meet you? What was the turning point?
Man, yeah, that's a tough question. It's a tough one because, not the question, but trying to think of a response to that question.
Yeah.
Because in some ways, I still feel like I haven't figured it out entirely. There are still days where I wake up and it's almost like I just feel inadequate from the get-go. And it's still hard to remind myself of the truths that I know, that God had my name written on the palm of his hand before the beginning of time, that he formed me in my mother's womb and knew me before anyone had heard my cry. And those things are still hard some days. So I haven't made it yet. So I can't really say if there's a turning point, but it's been this progression of awakening to an awareness that God does love me. And it's my first love. The love that is always present, that I never have to do anything to access. And it is something tangible that can be accessed. That when I turn inward and sit in quiet, you know, with the Spirit as the person who is, or as the being that is just God's presence with me, and I get to experience that love in a very tangible way. Maybe not in a way that like makes butterflies, you know, float around my stomach, or that makes me just want to like ooh and ah, but in a way that grounds me in who I am outside of what I do. So even on days when I don't feel it, or when I feel like I'm not doing enough to deserve it, not only do I get to turn inward and experience that through the Spirit, and in Christ, I get to enjoy that, but I also get that from my community. So people around me who are aware of these things, who are constantly reminding me that I am loved not only by them, but by God. And so, yeah, I can't really pinpoint a turning point in the past couple of years, but more of a growing awareness to who God is and who I am and who he's made me to be.
That's so good. That's so good. Especially because there are areas of our lives that like maybe we've struggled with and have manifested themselves throughout our childhood that we still struggle with today.
Yeah.
And it's not like once you hit 30, you're just perfect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe. I don't know yet.
Neither of us are sure. There.
Yeah.
But it's not like you just reach a certain point and you've made it.
Yeah.
It's continual growth. Mm-hmm. And it's making that choice despite the feelings.
Yeah.
And it's choosing Jesus. And one of those choices that we have to make is to continually remind ourselves that God does love us. And sometimes being raised in the church, you become numb to that statement.
Oh, of course.
You forget what that means.
Love is, the word love is utterly useless.
Yeah. And just taking the time to remind yourself that, no, God loves you despite what you just did.
Yeah.
God loves you despite your sin. Mm-hmm. He chooses you. He chose to pursue you. He chose to send his son down to this earth to live a perfect life so that he could take your sins. Like, yeah. And that's a difficult love to comprehend.
Absolutely.
And it's going to take a lifetime to understand. And so I really do appreciate you talking about how I don't know if there's just a turning point where I'm just okay now.
Yeah.
It's a daily battle. It's not one choice and it's all over. It's thousands of choices a day.
Yeah. Jesus is dressing and redressing my wounds every single day.
Mm.
At the start of every day, Jesus is there with me to dress those wounds anew.
Mm. One of my favorite ways I heard it described was actually our old college-age minister, Joshua Quadi.
Rip in peace.
He came up to me one time, and I was going through a really tough time. And he just said, Matt, I really like the stage of life you're in. Mm. And I looked at him all sarcastically, and I was like, stop. I hate this. Yeah. Like, this is horrible. Uh-huh. But he just looked at me and was like, Matt, imagine your life is just this, like, statue. And what you've done is you've continually decided to add to the statue because you felt like you needed more. You felt like you needed to be this to a certain person. You needed to do this in order to feel validation. And he said, right now what God is doing is he's chiseling everything off that you've added onto yourself to feel like you need to be enough. And he's revealing that who he has created you to be is enough.
Gosh, he always does that.
Such a good word.
That chotch. I love him to death. That's the thing. Is he always seems to manage. I don't know if it's like a spiritual gift or he's just super wise or what, but he always does that. He always just drops the bomb that you need.
Yeah.
Like just the Jesus bomb.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love him for it.
So do I. I love Quadi. So going back to your story a little bit, what has the healing looked like? What has been that dressing of that wound and redressing of that wound looked like in your life?
For one, it has been accepting what is and what is not every day. So not necessarily something that I've done for myself, but I feel like that the Spirit has done in me.
Hmm.
Thanks to Jesus.
Yeah.
It has been this acknowledging, hey, I have this wound. And that's okay. And there's part of that I grieve that happened to me, or that's how I grew up, or that there are other people that are experiencing the same thing. And I grieve that. And I grieve that that's the way that life is. But additionally, I accept it as being a part of who I am today and handing that over to Jesus. I know that's a really cliche way of saying that. But as much as just saying, Jesus, this is yours. I mean, you're Lord over it, and I trust you to heal it at every day. And grace is new every morning. And that's something that actually one of your former guests, Colton Banks, we talk about on a regular basis. He's a dear friend of mine, and he never fails to remind me that grace is new every morning.
Mm.
And so I think healing from that has been a lot of acceptance and recognizing that this is how my life is, and it's not how it should be.
Yeah.
But also being able to recognize that that's not how it should be gives me hope that there is something else waiting on the other side of eternity.
Yeah.
That being able to recognize that I have a desire, like an innate desire for something more than that, I think separates us from the rest of creation. That like I have this desire for something more and I think that's what a lot of people experience when they experience these like really emotional moments, is transcending life as I know it, as just this little ball of like hurt and fun and boredom and zeal and like all these different things. Hmm. It's like, it's more than that. There has to be something more to this story than just like, than just a grind of being wounded and trying to figure it out and being wounded again and trying to find healing. That someday, and someday soon, I'm going to experience life, and as Jesus says it, life to the fullest, which I really have taken as all of my, all the like notions of life, or of like how I would think like life as it should be, not necessarily just my opinion of it, but just the swirling like deep desire like in my bones that there's something more to just existence than just like what Willard calls particles in progress. You know, this idea that we're just like matter that's like thrown together and we're just like trying to get better with time.
Yeah.
So there's something more to it than that. And so a lot of it has been hope. Hope that even though there are days that I don't feel loved, that I truly am beyond what I feel. And I think growing out of that, growing out of just filtering life through my emotions to understanding and trusting on days that I don't feel it, that I am loved and that there's something better waiting in the future.
Yeah. I've heard it described that maturity, is learning to live life despite your feelings. I really do like that. And it's not saying that your feelings don't matter. Mm-hmm. Your feelings do, but it's realizing that your feelings don't define your life.
And they often lie. Like,
yeah.
Feelings often, there. That's been the biggest thing, is because I kind of did the whole pendulum swing to like, only emotions matter.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to live however my emotions dictate.
Yeah.
And that was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
That was awful. 100%. It was literally like the worst emotional season of my life, and was having like just emotional breakdowns and like contemplating like things that I would never think of otherwise by just going with whatever I felt.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah. So just don't trust your emotions all the time.
Yeah.
But they can sometimes be a good indicator of where the Spirit's leading you.
Yeah.
But so can good planning.
Yeah.
And wisdom and talking to people and getting some really tough advice.
Yeah.
You know, all the Spirit can move in all those things. So sorry, I hijacked your point. But
no,
but yes,
you're all
so,
good. No, that's really, it's such a good point, because it's like, yeah, the Spirit moves in all of these. And in everything that we use, we need to filter it through the gospel.
Hmm.
And we need to filter it through the Bible. It's like, sure, somebody comes up to you and tells you something. It's all like, sweet. You're not just going to believe everything somebody says. You're going to want to test whether or not it's true. And it's got to be the same way with your feelings. Just because you feel it doesn't make it true. Your feelings do often lie to you. I mean, just ask any dude who struggled with lust in his lifetime.
Dude, like, honestly.
It's a constant battle. Your feelings lie to you constantly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, that's a really good word.
And man, it is tough. It's tough to filter that. And the thing is, I'm not going to be a holistic human. I'm not going to be healthy if I really do just rely on those feelings.
Hmm.
And if I did that, it's likely that, like, it's no wonder half of all marriages fail when, you know, if that's how we dictated our lives.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, 100%.
Holy cow, it'd be a mess.
So the last question I ask on the podcast, I ask to every one of my guests, and I absolutely love this question, and I've loved hearing the responses that I've gotten. What message do you want your story to tell? And so for everybody who's listening right now, who just got to experience a little bit of what it was like to live the life of Raymond Charles Vial III.
Yes.
What message are you hoping that that story tells?
Yeah. Oh man, another great question. We didn't prepare before this. We didn't sit down for multiple hours to try and like plot this out.
No, and I kind of like it, and I'm still trying to figure out how much I like it.
Yeah.
Because I've only prepared with two of my podcasts so far.
Uh-huh.
But the other two, and now this one, haven't been prepared for in advance at all. And I kind of like it.
There's a part of me that does think if I tried to prepare this and make it sound good, I would be way off. I'd be way off base.
Oh, okay.
I would pick and choose what parts of me that I want people to hear, which I'm probably still doing in some way or another. But you're getting a little bit more of a off the top. This is like my personal freestyle. So what do I want people to take away from this, from my story, is that there is a human, like Jesus is human. So like in the same way that we experience love from other humans, like Jesus felt love deeper than any of us could imagine, any of us have ever felt on our behalf. And so the results of that are absurd. No other worldview, religion, philosophy has ever had a God that is so utterly willing to suffer along with humans, to suffer along with humans and to die on their behalf. Every story, I mean, and I would love to hear, I've never found one personally, but I would love to hear if there's one out there, because that would be an interesting thing. But I've never found one. And though we all have wounds from our childhood, and though they may define a lot of the things, the choices that we make, the people that we surround ourselves with, the career that we choose, where we go to school, you name it, though that is a part of who we are, and it's not the entirety of who we are, and actually we're able to find a much deeper meaning through them. So healing, I think, healing from wounds is much more significant as a defining factor of our identity than the actual wounds are. So man, I think I'm trying to make it quick in some ways, but I'm terrible at one-liners.
Yeah,
so I might trail off a little bit here, but I do think that we find that life often disappoints us, and that life often is really tough, that things are done to us and we do things to other people, and we find ourselves asking this question of, is this really all that's out there for me? Is it just being hurting other people, and just experiencing some halfway decent moments along the way? And I think that we should lean into that a little bit. Whenever we experience disappointment, we should lean into that and ask that some questions, or ask some questions about that. Why is it that we are so disappointed whenever we're not loved? Whenever we feel like life is not how it should be. I mean, heck, especially right now. I mean, it's September of 2020 as we're recording this. It's like the world has gone through some of the most brutal months it has in a long time.
Yeah.
On a global scale, not even just in our neighborhood.
Yeah, for sure.
And so it's like there's this worldwide sense of this isn't how it should be. There's something else that has to be here. Now I'm not saying it's some sort of transcendental like I sense God at the heart of the universe or anything like super yogi, but this genuine feeling that I'm disappointed. But why am I disappointed? It's because I really believe that this isn't right. And so I would encourage you guys to, or anybody who's listening to this, to consider that, consider why that is, and see what Jesus says about the kingdom, about what that means for the spiritual nobodies, for the poor, people who hunger and thirst for righteousness where there is none, people who are our neighbors, people who are us sometimes. See what he says about that, and I would encourage you, or anybody listening to this, to see if that's not a better view a more hopeful view of the world as it should be. And putting your trust in Jesus and trusting that he is who he says he is, and holding on to that hope that he seems to have, and that he seems to have on our behalf, because he really does love us and he has a desire to see us living life and life to the fullest. So that's what I would leave everyone with.
That's good. That's real good, dude. Thank you.
It's been an honor. I appreciate you.
I'm constantly thinking, just throughout the past couple minutes while you've been saying this, of Hebrews. I think it's Hebrews 12 in the beginning of that chapter, when it says, "For the joy set before him," and him being Jesus, "he endured the cross." And it's just like, okay, Jesus, right before the crucifixion, begged God to take this cup from him. He's saying, "God, if I don't have to, if we can save humanity in any other way, let's do it."
Yeah.
And God's like, "No, there's no other way." And Hebrews tells us, like, for the joy set before him, like, what joy? And it's literally like, this man experienced the roughest 24 hours, like, probably worse than most of all of us. He was crucified, and for the joy set before him, he endured it. And that joy is not only the relationship that he has with his Father, with God, but also the salvation that he brought for us throughout it. And I'm thinking about all of us today, all of us listening to hearing Trey's story. It's just, Jesus didn't come down and live a difficult life so that you wouldn't live a difficult life. He came down, lived a difficult life so that you could have hope for the reconciliation and for the hope of the return of him. It's just like, he doesn't promise a perfect life, but what he promises is a relationship that will be perfect in the end.
Yeah. I think, like, man, he had, I mean, a difficult life. Like, you look at even the circumstances of his birth, you know, a teenage virgin in the first century in the ancient Near East, you know, like, that's already pretty rough.
Yeah.
Enough as it is.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you have to do a, you know, a trek on a donkey with your husband to his hometown so that you can, so that you can be a part of the census, but then you can't find any place to stay, and you end up giving birth. Like, they're the, your mom isn't there. You know, there's no midwife. You are there with your husband, who's probably not much help. Like, come on, ladies. Like, you got that on us. Not going to lie. Probably zero help. And you're in a barn.
Yeah.
And you're in a place that you're not familiar with. And then you hear that, hey, there's this king who has found out about your son, and he's trying to kill your baby. You have got to get out of here. And so then you have to go into the night desert and flee to Egypt, a place where you don't know anybody, only to find out that that king who was trying to kill your baby couldn't find him, and killed dozens, if not hundreds, of other babies as a result. And that's weighing on you. That's like just his birth.
Yeah.
Much less like his life, death, and burial. Like,
yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Like, what other God in any worldview, any religion, or any person that we've put our hope in can relate to the human struggle more than that? Like, more than Jesus. And for him to go through that on our behalf, to come down from glory, to go through life on earth as we know it, to be crucified, to be buried, to be in the tomb for 3 days, and then to rise again. Like, what Like, that's the same hope that we have. That though we are born in maybe not the most ideal circumstances, maybe our family is super messed up, maybe we don't live the life that we feel that we deserve, that we want, and we have the hope of getting to experience exactly what Jesus did, that though he went through this difficult life, he rose on the other side, sacrificing himself for his enemies for the sake of others. And I love that, and I find so much hope in that, and I have yet to find anything that satisfies my soul, that satisfies this deep sort of longing, this guttural longing inside of my body for something more than life as we know it.
Yeah. For anybody who is living in just a difficult situation right now, I love what Trey said. Nobody relates more than Jesus. Just know that you're not alone. Jesus struggled too. And even more than that, if you relate to Trey's story, that just goes to show that there is another human being alive right now who has struggled with that. Like, you're not alone. You don't have to be alone. You never have to be alone. There are other people who are struggling around you, but ultimately Jesus Christ struggled in this life as well. And he loves you with absolutely everything that he is. And he's not calling you to earn it. He's not calling you to work for it. He just wants you to accept it. He just wants you to be in relationship with him, which is incredible and really hard to understand sometimes. Really hard to understand. And for those of you who don't relate to what Trey said, that's okay. We all live different lives. But there are people who have lived lives like this and people who do relate. And so if you really do not relate with absolutely anything he said, the best thing that you can take from this is the ability to better your ability in loving others and loving those around you. Live lives of empathy towards them and help them see Jesus in the midst of whatever situation of life they might be in. But Jesus loves you, period. He lived a difficult life for your joy.
And that's what something we get to experience together.
Amen.
We get to celebrate that together and enjoy that hope with one another and with whatever we bring to the table. And that's okay.
Yeah.
So I am grateful to you, Matt, for bringing me on today to be able to share that hope.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. It was an honor.
This was so much fun.
This was a blast.
Trey and I, before this, we were like, we should make a podcast, the two of us.
We're considering it.
We should do it.
Be on the lookout.
Be on the lookout for whatever that podcast might look like. But yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Anytime.
It was so good to just hear some of the things in your life that even I haven't heard before. Yeah. But ultimately, how Jesus Christ has changed and shaped your life. But yeah, we did it. We've done it. We've made a podcast.
This is it.
And so we are going to end the podcast with the same music that started it. See you, people.
Have a great rest of your day. I love you.
That's a wrap right there.